Well, good morning, church.
Good morning.
It is great to see you all. Great to be with you all. We are blessed with a beautiful day outside, and man, a great day of praise and worship indoors. I'm thankful to be with the body of Christ who loves to worship and to share life together the way this congregation does. Really glad to have Junior and Rocky, wherever they were. They're back there. They're visiting with us today, and they did a great job on the gathering. I told y'all about it. It was out at the Ninth Grade Academy, the football field, and it was just a tremendous night. But Junior and Rocky, I hope you learned something this morning, that you guys know how to put spirit in it. We know how to keep things on time, and I hope that this will be a lesson to you, that we are going to be regimented and on time. We're going to get you out of here and to J&G at the right time. No, it is good. We have got a lot going on. It's the beginning of fall break. So we do have a lot of families that are gone. That's great. That's good. I hope that everybody has a good, safe, and fruitful journey. This is also a big week of preparation for One Day of Hope. Now, if you have never worked with One Day of Hope before, it is a monumental task, I'm here to tell you. This afternoon at 1 o'clock, we've got to move all of this. I mean, that's a lot. And that is not even all of it, but that is all that is still in the gym and sitting out there waiting for ready and willing helpers to do it. Guys, I don't know if you have plans for this afternoon, if you're watching the game. Skip the game. I'm skipping the game. Skip the game today. Miss Jane does not need to move any more of these clothes. I'm going to shame you. I'm going to shame you. Bring a pickup truck. Bring your little escort. I don't care what you got. Come loaded up with clothes. And I'm in a little car. I didn't think that came out wrong. But we'll take all the labor we can get. But we're going to move. Yeah, cut that from the recording. Don't send that out. All the kids are like, escort? So we've got to move all of these today at 1 o'clock. The more people that we get to do it, the faster we can do it. It's so much easier if we can get some good help to do that today at 1 o'clock. And then this week, they are shorthanded. So if you are free any day this week, Jane has said she's going to be out at the fairgrounds every day from 9 in the morning till 5 in the evening. If you could come and volunteer 2 days, 3 days, 1 day, if you could just come out for 1 day and help sort clothes and move clothes and set up things, that would be great. If you could just come out for a few hours 1 day, whatever you can do, this is all hands on deck type of situation. Let Jane know when you can come out so that she can sort of manage the schedule and have the work all taken care of. She undertakes this every year, and it is too much every year. And somehow she still gets the right people in the right place at the right time handling all this stuff. So I encourage you today at 1 o'clock and then later through this week, if you're on fall break, great. If you're not on fall break, great. If you have kids at home, that's great. That's more hands. Come bring them. I watched the Rucker girls carrying 2x4s and lead pipes last year. You can bring the kids. I'll put them to work. We'll take anybody we can get to do this work. So it's a big week. I'm going to adjust this real quick. Sorry, I was slipping down. Okay, so starting in a week from tomorrow, I'm going to be switching. Yeah, most of y'all know I drive a school bus for the county. I have driven for like the last 5 years or so. But beginning the following Monday, next Monday, I'm going to be switching to drive for Manchester City Schools. And it's a big thing. I'm excited about it. And it'll be good to work with some of the people over there that I'll meet, I'm sure. But I'm excited about that. And you may have ridden a bus growing up, and I love when people ask me what I do, and I get around to telling them I'm a bus driver, and you get some just great stories about their time as a kid on the bus or some of their kids' stories about the bus. But one of the things you may not know that we as bus drivers have to do is at the end of every trip, it's a small thing. We have to walk through all the way through the bus to make sure there's nobody on there because a surprising amount of time, kids will fall asleep. And you'll get done with your route and you'll be headed back to the garage and see a head pop up in the back of the bus. Or in the mornings, you'll finish dropping off all the kids and you're heading back. And then some sleepy high schooler pops up in the morning and realize they fell asleep on the way to school and nobody said anything to them. That happens quite a bit. So it's a task. In fact, it's a law mandated task. And a lot of the buses will have buttons on the back that you have to walk through and press that button or an alarm will go off. So I was talking to one particular bus driver. She was talking about at the end of her afternoon route, the last kid on her bus would just volunteer, just started going through the bus and would say, oh, you know, so-and-so is still here or somebody left something here. And she told him recently, she's just really appreciated him volunteering to do this. And the little kid said, actually, I'm just looking for treasures. So, I mean, here she thought he was doing this great volunteer service, and the kid was just looking to see if anybody left any money on the bus that he could pocket. It is funny how you can look at the same action, and the same action can look entirely different from different perspectives. Well, this morning we're continuing our study through the Gospel of John, examining the life of Jesus and looking at some of the stories from his life. Now, everybody loves a good story, and that's not surprising because really, human life, it takes the form of a story. Everything. Your life is composed of all these different stories, and you put those all together into one big story. And some of the stories in our lives we choose, some of them we don't get to choose. You know, you're born into a story as soon as you enter the world. You're a part of a family. You didn't choose that family. That was just your story, right? Our family narratives shape who we are, what we grow up to be. Maybe you were born in Texas or Tennessee or maybe you were born in Manhattan or Jamaica or wherever you're born up or wherever you're raised up, that shapes you. And it depends on when you were born too, whether you were born during the Great Depression or during the Industrial Revolution or during the 60s or during the Technological Revolution. Those things shape us too. You don't choose any of that. You don't choose whether you're born rich or poor or male or female or black or white. All of these things and more go into shaping who you are. It goes into shaping what you believe about yourself to be true. But we're not just made up of those stories. We also get the stories of the larger world around us. And there are stories that are help hold our lives together. So you and I, not only do we have those born-in narratives, but we're also searching for stories as well. Stories that will help us learn how to deal with suffering or how to live at peace with those around us. We're searching for a story that will ultimately make us happy, that will give us peace and contentment. In fact, I would argue that we need a story. It's not just something we make up looking for these stories, that we actually need a story to help explain the world around us so that we can find real happiness. Everyone is looking for one. You're looking for one. I'm looking for one. No matter how old we are or what our social status is or our gender, we're all looking for stories. That's why some people pursue money, right? Because they believe that if they could get enough money, they would be happy. Some people pursue pleasure or experience, and they believe they can do these certain things, that then they'll be happy. Some people go after fame and believe that if they can achieve a certain level of notoriety, then they'll be happy. We're all looking for a story that we ultimately think will make us happy. And today, from the Gospel of John, is this story. It's two of those kinds of stories, really. It's the story of Jesus, and it's the story of the Samaritan woman that he meets at the well. Now, if you've been paying attention in the Gospel of John, you know that John is trying to tell us why he believes Jesus is the Christ, why we ought to follow him. And you got a private encounter with Nicodemus, and we realize, you know, Nicodemus, it wasn't just about Nicodemus, but it was about the law that he represented. And this Samaritan woman, she represents more than just a random woman, just herself. She stands for all of the people who were wholeheartedly despised and rejected by Orthodox Judaism. You know, from their vantage point, if you were a good, faithful Jewish person, this woman had three strikes against her already. Number one, she was a Samaritan. Number two, she was a woman. And number three, she was a sexual sinner. So how would Jesus, a devout Jewish male, deal with all these strikes against this woman? And the story begins with Jesus on his way to Galilee, passing through Samaria. And the text said that Jesus had to go through Samaria. And on his way through Samaria, he stops at Jacob's well. He had to go, which meant that Jesus felt like there was some urgency to take this shortcut to get there quickly, because no self-respecting Jewish man would take this shortcut through Samaria unless he absolutely had to, because there was such hostility between the Jews and the Samaritans. And maybe you've heard something about this history, but I want to just give you a brief rundown. All the way back in the Old Testament, when Assyria carried off the northern kingdom, carried off Israel, and they captured Samaria, they deported large numbers of Jewish inhabitants and replaced them with other people from all over the empire. So what you end up with in Samaria is some Jewish people, but some just random people from all over the Assyrian Empire. They intermarried. It changed not only their bloodlines, but it also changed their religious beliefs. So they brought their own gods with them, and they added some different practices to the worship of Yahweh God. And eventually, they dropped the other gods, and they just worshiped Yahweh. But it was different. It was changed. So, for instance, they only used the first five books, what we would call the Pentateuch. You know, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. They didn't use Psalms. They didn't use any of the prophets or the other scriptures. Nothing else. And when Judea, who had been carried off by Babylon, they come back from exile, they've got to start rebuilding their temple in Jerusalem. You've heard the story about that before. And since it was their temple to their same God, the Samaritans are like, hey, we want to help you build a temple to God. And the Jewish people were like, uh-uh, you're not touching this because you guys are corrupted. So, of course, their feelings are hurt. They go back to Samaria and they decide, well, since we can't help with that temple, we'll build our own temple on Mount Gerizim. And so they built their own temple and worshiped God there on Mount Gerizim until the Jews burned it down about 100 years before this. So by the time we get to this story, there's a lot of animosity between the two groups. They were well and truly bitter enemies. But Jesus goes there anyway. And while he's there, his disciples leave and they go into town, they go to get some food. And Jesus is tired, so he just sits down by Jacob's well around noon, middle of the day, heat of the day. There's no good reason to be out in the full sun in the middle of the day until this Samaritan woman comes along. Nothing too unusual so far. This is where it gets interesting, because Jesus asks this woman for a drink. Now, yes, he's hot and he's thirsty, but to get a drink from this woman means he's going to have to use her vessel. He doesn't carry around his own jug. He doesn't have his own dipper or anything like that. To drink, he's going to have to use her vessel, which is going to make him unclean. This woman knows this is really weird. And so she says to him, you're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? And this is what Jesus says. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Sir, the woman said, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where are you going to get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock? Now, Samaritans had a great reverence for Jacob. They believed they too were descendants of Jacob. They were descended through Joseph and Ephraim and Manasseh. So they traced their bloodlines the same way Jewish people did. And they were like, we're a descendant of Jacob. We have great reverence for Jacob. This is Jacob's well. Are you saying you're better than Jacob? And Jesus answered. He said, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water that I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. Now, what's going on here with all this talk about wells and living water? Well, let's start with the Samaritan woman's story, okay? Now, as we find out later, Jesus reveals this woman has been married 5 times, and she's currently living with a guy who's not her husband, just cohabitating. Now, before we get too judgy on her, let's point out that she didn't divorce anybody. She didn't have any say in it, to be honest with you. And without a husband, she would have had very limited rights, like her ability to earn a living or make a living, severely limited. So we cannot lay the blame solely on this woman like she's some tramp just out sleeping around. She's just trying to get by. But the fact that she's been married 5 times and is currently living with another man tells us a great deal about the story she believes, right? The story that we're all looking for, the story to find happiness. She has a story that she believes, and it's a broken one. Like many people, she believes that she'll find happiness if she can just find someone who loves her. Otherwise, she wouldn't keep trying, right? She wants to believe, she needs to believe that she is lovable and that if she finds the right guy who loves her, then she'll be happy. And it's like that well water she was drawing that day. It was a temporary fix at best. It was a broken story. Now, it's not the only broken story. Some people believe that if they get a certain amount in their bank account or buy a certain house or own a certain car, then they'll be content, then they'll be happy. Or if you get a certain job or a certain level of success or fame or power or pleasure, whatever it is, they believe that they can achieve that, they'll be happy. But it's just not true. Jesus says this story that you're living into is like the water you're drawing. It's dead. It's still. It's not going anywhere. It's not going to carry you anywhere. Because no matter how many people love you, no matter how much money you have or power or success, it cannot protect you when the suffering comes. And suffering always comes. Sickness and failure are in pursuit of us. Even death, right? Death comes to us all. And none of those stories are capable of handling that kind of suffering because those stories are still, they're unmoving. They are as dead as the water at the bottom of that well. They're not going anywhere. But for whatever reasons, we, like this woman, keep thinking these stories will make us happy. That's why it's not just this woman's story. It is also our story. When Jesus is speaking to this woman, he's speaking to you and me that what we believe about ourselves, what we believe about the world to be true, what we believe about finding happiness and contentment and peace, it's all a big lie. It is dead. But that's not the story of Jesus. It's not the story of the living water. And you can tell a great deal about Jesus' story just based on how he treats this woman. And Jesus' story is very different from hers. It's very different from ours. You see, in this story, we find all sorts of ways to avoid or dismiss or exclude people and communities with whom the differences we find unacceptable. So these people, those people over there, are so different than me, I exclude them. I keep them out, right? Any story that allows us to build our identity by denying the identity of someone else cannot be good because it's inevitably going to lead to injustice and violence. If I dismiss all people from this part of the world or who speak that language or have that skin color or that education level or these political beliefs, or if I can dismiss those people, bad stuff can happen. Because if I don't believe you really count, then I don't care what sort of horrible things happen to you. Does that make sense? If I don't believe that you really count, then I can treat you all kinds of terrible. But Jesus, no matter all the stripes, he believes this woman counts. That she was worth something. Because Jesus has a different story. It was a story that led him to reach out to her in compassion and offer her living water. Now, living water was a Hebrew phrase. It meant moving water. Think creek or stream or river. Water that is flowing. That is living water, right? Rivers or streams. And it was believed to be the purest water, right? It purifies itself as it flows downstream. Living water was what was preferred for ritual purification. So if you were going to have water for the traditional Jewish rituals of purification, you didn't get well water. You went and got living water. It was better. It was the living water that took away the defilement and made them acceptable worshipers. Even though you were unclean, you get this living water and it makes you clean. Later in John chapter 7, Jesus says this. Says, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as scriptures have said, rivers of living water will flow from within them." Now by this, he meant the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were later to receive. Jesus offers this woman, this adulterous Samaritan woman, the Holy Spirit of God. Why would he do that? Why would you give something so sacred, so powerful, so pure, so holy to someone so unholy, right? It's because he believed she was worth it. And as we've read her story in John 4, we find out that she proves Jesus right, that she was worth it. She goes running back to her village and she tells everybody who will listen about this amazing man and how he speaks the truth and how he changes lives, how he has power. And so she invites them all to come out and meet the source of this living water. She changed the lives of a village who had rejected her. And let me tell you this morning, you may not believe that you're worth much either. You may be convinced that because of the family you came from, or maybe the family you created, or the family you broke, you may be convinced because of your success in life or your unsuccess in life, because of your checkered past, that you don't live up to what you think you ought to be worthy of Jesus. But Jesus begs to differ. He believes that your story has a living water ending. He believes that no matter how broken your story may be, no matter what the world thinks of you, no matter what your past may be, no matter how badly you've messed it up along the way, that your story is redeemable. He believes that you, like the Samaritan woman, are worth the living water. Not just worthy of the living water he gives you, but that you are going to offer living water to other people. That this living water is going to bubble up out of you and it's going to change the lives of people you meet. And they're going to see you and they're going to know this is Dave. And Dave's got just a terrible background. But look at him now. What has changed about Dave? There's something different about him. He's not dead inside. He's got living water flowing out of him. This is Jane. Oh, I picked someone real. Sorry. This is Jane. And we all know how badly Jane messed up. And in Jane's life, she's just tried everything and anything, and yet now Jane is offering something real and true and powerful and life-changing. She's offering an encounter with living water. Brothers and sisters, there are two stories out there about you, both of which can be yours. There is the world's story about you that is based on your past and the bad decisions you've made and the terrible things you've said and thought and done. And there's also Jesus' story about you that takes all those terrible truths and makes something beautiful out of it. And turns you from something dead into something living. This morning, my prayer is that you will grasp the living story and allow the living water of Jesus Christ to flow through you. If we can encourage you this morning, pray for you, lift you up, We want to do that now. Won't you come? We stand and as we sing.